Welcome to Earth's Mightiest Weirdos. There is a familiar face in the top right corner that has not been here for a few weeks, and he's currently frozen. Rob, how are you tonight?
I hope I'm not frozen. I'm not frozen here.
You were frozen just mid-dance for just a second.
Oof. Oh, scared me. I'm doing good. Rob, how welcome. Are you, man? This is great.
It is so good to have you, Rob. We're going to give you a chance to plug your normal Monday night show on the Diz Nerdy Network here in just a little bit. We also have a furry friend joining us in the bottom, along with Greg from the Disney Fanatics. Greg, how are you tonight?
I'm good. Chaos is erupting all around me. My cat's jumping on the table. I just walked in from Animal Kingdom. Thank you so much for inviting me on, Brian.
It is absolutely a pleasure to have you. Cannot wait to talk Moon Knight. I am going to silence my phone. I apologize. And our fourth weirdo is now joining us, Mark from Diz Life Podcast. Mark, how are you this evening?
Coming in hot.
Perfect. So Mark and Greg, both fresh off of Diz Live tonight. Lots of interesting stuff happening in the world of Walt Disney World. As it relates to Earth's Mightiest Weirdos, we, Mark and I, will be able to ride Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind on Mark on May 8th, me on May 9th. Greg, it's probably easier to list the days he's not going to get the chance to go on it. Greg, what are you looking forward to most when it comes to Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind? And then we'll go to Rob next.
I'm looking for how the vehicle is going to be moving around with the screens. I'm looking for the interaction of that and how the songs are going to play in the vehicle while you're riding. I'm really looking forward to the music of it.
Rob, you're our resident Rip Ride Rocket connoisseur of such. Does it sound like you're going to pick a song like you do on Rip Ride Rocket?
You know what? I have not overlooked into it. I don't think so. I haven't heard anybody mention that, but I haven't overly searched. I too am going on May 9th.
So I want
to be slightly surprised. The only thing I've heard from pretty much everybody is how good it is. So that excites me. I've heard some people say it's their new favorite ride. So I hope I'm one of those people.
I have not heard a negative thing about it yet, even from people that aren't massive. Greg, is Holly going to go on it?
She is going to try one time, but she may bail out at the chicken door at the end. She wants to go through the queue. Okay. She just hasn't decided about the ride.
Dr. Evil in the top right corner, are you excited for May 8th?
Mr. Bigglesworth is very excited. I would pay $1 million to go on that ride.
Well, you might have to at some point. All right, let's do a roundup in the comments. Allison is here. Allison, fresh off of giving away a water bottle over on Diz Live. So check out Mark's Diz Life podcast shop. You can get that hat that he's wearing. Sarah is here. Piano Rob is here and here. Maya is here. She has a hippo emoji. We will talk much about that. Justin, Greg, Holly, Justin. Kara says, welcome back, Rob. Welcome back, Rob and Greg. It is a pleasure to have everybody, Allison, ready to talk Moon Knight. We will get to Moon Knight here in just a minute. Everybody's happy to see the dog. I'm going to name... What is the dog's actual name, not Bigglesworth?
The dog is... this is Finley. She is a... She's a good dog sometimes. But sometimes she just... She can't help it.
I want to hear from Finley. How good of an owner is he? Is he a good owner sometimes or only all the time?
Finley and I have a weird relationship, right, Finley? There's sometimes that Finley just, she does hood rat stuff, man. She like gets crazy.
You have a Finley. I have a Finn. He's a golden retriever. And then we have Finn and Ray that hang out together. It works out really, really well. Greg,
my dog would eat that for breakfast.
All right, well, let's get into it. Before we get into Moon Knight, we talked a little bit of Thor, Love and Thunder trailer with Mark last week, so he will give the floor up. Rob, let's go to you first. We got a couple of posters of Thor and then of the mighty Thor, Jane Foster, wielding Mjolnir. Rob, what did you think of the Thor trailer? How excited are you for this film on July 8th?
I'm very excited. I don't know if the trailer made me any more because I don't know if I can be more excited, but they made this trailer look so kind of happy almost. They put the Sweet Child of Mine, which was the Guns N' Roses, to me is much lighter than the normal Led Zeppelin that goes with Thor. But we know Gore is going to be one of the worst villains ever, so I know that this lightheartedness is not going to last. This is going to be a big villain, so I'm very excited about this.
There are some mounting theories that that scene we got of Russell Crowe as Zeus in the trailer is going to be very short-lived, and Russell Crowe is going to be the first casualty of this film. That's going to be pretty hardcore. Greg, I know you're a Thor Ragnarok guy, Greg. Are you excited for Thor Love and Thunder as much as the rest of us?
The last 2 weeks, I've been pulled back into the Marvel Universe more than I have in the past 2 years. Love and Thunder got my... I'm ready for it. That montage, I hope that we get this Rocky IV montage with Thor whipping the chains around. I hope that's like, this is how I become Thor again. But the ending with just Natalie Portman grabbing the hammer at the end, I was so ready. I am ready for this.
She is looking jacked beyond belief, too. Like, that really caught me off guard. We got one other poster. Mark, I'll get your opinion, actually, since you got to give your opinion on the trailer last week, but you did not get to give your opinion on this poster of Jane Foster. Does this move the needle anymore? Like, could it have even gone up any higher?
I'm really excited about Jane Foster. I don't hate her the way that some people give her. They give her a lot of flack. I wasn't a fan of the Dark World in general, but I really liked her character in the first Thor. Like, I really enjoy Natalie Portman. I think she's a wonderful actress. Seeing her reforge Mjolnir and holding that hammer and what it represents, that comic book run I actually have on order right now from the local comic shop that I want to get it. I hope, and like, hope, fingers crossed, that if there's going to be a successor to him, I hope that she takes over this character for a little while and that she gets a run with the hammer. We've talked about this numerous times. I love representation. I love the way that they are changing a lot of these characters. I really think that one of the strengths of the MCU right now is having people see themselves in all these different characters. So I love people. I love, like, my daughter being able to look at a character like this and seeing herself in this superhero arc. And I like little girls being able to look at the MCU and seeing these kind of characters. But I'm psyched, man. I'm here for Jane Foster as the Mighty Thor. Let's do it.
She's ready to see more Valkyrie. Justin says he wants to see more Korg. If they hold true to what happened in the comics, Jane Foster actually is going through chemotherapy and is a cancer patient, mm-hmm. and then is wielding Mjolnir and becoming the Mighty Thor kind of by night, as you will.
And it wipes all her treatments away.
Literally killing her. All indications are leading us down the path that we are going to have a similar cancer storyline. And again, Mark, you talk about the way the MCU has been going is people are able to see themselves in these characters, even though it is fictional, even though it is very fantastical. Unfortunately, of the four of us in this screen, I would assume all four of us have been touched by cancer in one way or another. Yeah. So I think the emotional heartstrings that this film is going to pull is going to be really, really emotional and really just powerful. I don't know if we're going to get any more Natalie Portman after, but I could be wrong. That would be very exciting. Another thing we got last week, we got a poster for Miss Marvel, which is coming out on Disney Plus on June 8th. Is there any overexcitement in this panel for Miss Marvel on June 8th?
I don't want to say an overexcitement, but I'm looking forward to finally getting that character introduced.
Yeah. How about you, Greg?
I'm a little concerned about it right now just because I know that they were having cast members and a few other people preview the show, and then they had to go back in and reshoot some scenes and redo some stuff. So the what was speculated was it was not going a great way. So I'm really interested to see how they changed it and how good it's really going to be. Look, it's Marvel. It's Disney Plus. They're not going to disappoint us by giving us low-grade stuff. So, again, they're probably going to do a good job and put that out. I know my daughter loves Ms. Marvel, so I'm excited for her.
It's a really great character. I'll let Mark go, and then I'll share kind of my concerns with it.
Some of the early reports have it that it's almost very sitcom-y and very geared towards kids more so than being a more traditional MCU property. If that is true, I'm concerned. I'm not abandoning it, but I'm concerned. I don't want it to see like big shot meets the MCU. I don't want it to see it have like more of a sitcom or a comical feel to it where it's like a teeny bopper show. That would worry me a little bit. I like having things that are made for young audiences, but I don't know. I'm concerned. That's all.
You're not thinking fourth dimensionally.
I have similar concerns to what Mark is saying. Simple fact is we're talking about a comic book movie franchise. This is made for kids at times. If they want to channel that, or if they want to target that Disney Channel audience to an extent, honestly, I'm okay with it, but it's the timing of June 8th that really concerns me, because that means we're going to have, for the first time in history, an overlap of Marvel Studios and Star Wars content. Obi-Wan Kenobi is going to be able to carry Disney Plus subscriptions. Something tells me if they're going to overlap it with Kenobi, that Ms. Marvel's not going to be able to carry those same Disney Plus subscriptions. And that is the one thing that has me most concerned.
But you don't have to love the series to love the character and what the character is going to mean for the future. I think some of these series, they have to just set something in motion so they can use the character later.
Because so we know her next appearance.
I have three adult kids now that grew up during the Hannah Montana era of the Disney Channel. So Sweet Life, Hannah Montana, all these shows like that. I'm okay if they do a Ms. Marvel version of that, because those shows have lasted that many years in this household. So I don't mind if they do a show like that. I think there's an audience that you can tap into and do a show like this.
If we're talking about tapping into that audience, Maya Kane fits that audience very much. She said it's one of the few comics she's read. She loves Marvel, but the trailer did feel a little very Disney Channel. I don't think that hurts Maya's feelings. Maya loves the Cheetah Girls, and Maya loves all the Sweet Life of Zack and Cody and everything else. Oh, she even says the Sweet Life in the comments. So we will see what we get. But that's the thing for me, is I feel like Star Wars and Marvel are supposed to carry subscriptions to this service, and if you're overlapping it with Obi-Wan Kenobi, something tells me something's up. Not to be negative, that's just where I'm at.
I think it's as simple as, like you said, though. I don't think it's made for us. It's not made for us middle-aged men, but they want to bring this young audience in. So I think they're trying. I think this is just that. It's they're going fishing for a young audience. Let's get them hooked on, and then we carry our movies for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
My 8-year-old daughter is absolutely stoked for Ms. Marvel, and that's what they're going for.
Yeah, so there it is.
If there is a musical number in it, I'm out.
Oh, see, I'm going to tell you what.
Too.
I love that part of Hawkeye. So they can play that scene. They can. I want to watch the whole musical. Like I'm in on that. I'll save the city every day.
Touche.
All right. Well, let's get into talking about Moon Knight. Not a single one of you. Mark, maybe you did join week one of Moon Knight. But I don't think any of you have gotten to be on here to tell us your thoughts of Moon Knight. Mark, you were on week one, right? Rob, how are you feeling on Moon Knight overall before we talk about episode 4?
I love it. They have me hooked. The story can go in a bunch of different directions, and I'm letting them take me where you want to take me.
Greg, how about you? You said Marvel's gotten you back the last 2 weeks that they haven't in 2 years.
They have gotten me back in this show. I watched the first 2 episodes and I was kind of in that. I don't know if you ever remember the movie Memento. It was just kind of distorted and all over the place. It was a little confusing for me to hop back into Marvel Universe for that. But by the time I hit episode 3 and had that Indiana Jones feel and the adventure, and it sucked me right back in. And I was excited to wake up this morning to watch this episode again. I was excited to be part of the Moon Knight universe.
And Mark, how about you? Is it held up after week one?
It has. It continues to get more and more interesting. I think the phrase that I used when I texted you earlier in the week, it does remind me very much of WandaVision in that there's a lot of meat on the bone with this series. The one thing I loved about this show was when we had WandaVision, we could sit and speculate. And there was so much to those episodes beyond just the what we saw and reacting to what we saw. This kind of show allows us to run with our theories. It allows us to speculate. It allows us to dive into the source material and the comics. It really is one of those perfect convergences of paying homage to the comic books and pushing it forward and making it different enough so that it's engaging a whole new crop of people that don't even know who Moon Knight is. But then the people who are diehard fans are absolutely loving all of the Easter eggs and the stuff that's drawing inspiration right from the comics. And there's enough there that we can talk about it on a weekly basis and be wrong. And that's what I love being wrong about Marvel.
Before we move on, I got to jump back to Alex's comment. He says, oh no, I've got two dates to prom, talking about Ms. Marvel. That makes me laugh. The Memento thing, Greg, you called it out. It rung true with Sarah. It rung true with me. Very, very similar, concepts there. So let's get into it. I will say, friend of the program and host at Babu's freaking podcast, Mike Ruby, we were talking to him about it, Mark and I, and he said he's a little bit out on this show. And I will say, in the middle of this episode, I did start to wonder, okay, are we going to start moving things forward? And then Mark got shot in the chest twice. And then we were watching a very off-brand Indiana Jones, and then everything was white and I was very much back in. It sucked me back in, but there was a time where I was a little bit concerned, but that was very few and far between. But I will say, we began this episode with the most unnecessary of gunfights that we have ever gotten in anything. It had absolutely zero impact on this story. If we really wanted it, it should have been at the end of the last episode, because that's where it picked up from. Does anybody have anything positive to say about this gunfight?
Well, listen, say what you will about Layla, she certainly had a lot of flair in this scene.
I didn't know you were setting yourself up. I'm sorry.
Hey, Rob, Do we have sound effects that we can do next time? I have nothing.
I can got do a it couple with my of mouth. Sound. I got a couple sound effects. It's up to you what you want.
Whatever for a bad joke.
Crickets. I'm for crickets. I'm now team cricket. That's excellent.
That's no good. Anyway, Layla may have a lot of flair. She's very capable, and maybe that's the whole point of this entire season, is to show you how capable Layla is.
I do have one observation that I think that all of us are probably asking now at this point, between Mark, Steven, and Layla. I don't understand at this point in the story, why aren't they packing? Why aren't one and or both of them carrying a sidearm or a firearm?
It's exactly where I was just about to go. That was not a gunfight. A gunfight consists of two people shooting at each other. This was just guy with big gun shooting at her. Like, it was definitely one-sided.
I have two ideas on it. One, I either think that they needed to find a place to kind of show her capability of taking care of herself if they're going to move her forward. And two, you're going to hear me say this probably a lot in the next 30 minutes here, but all the references to the field of reeds, I'm not sure what is real and what's not real, because that whole field of reeds with Egyptian death is a mirror. It's like a mirror dimension, if you will. I hate to use that phrase because of Doctor Strange, of Earth. So I don't even know if everything we're seeing is real anyway.
Yeah, but still, even if it's not real, I don't know why we need that. But that's just kind of my, like,
I agree. The capability is the only thing I could really think of. They needed one thing in the six episodes to really show her take care of herself.
Yeah. And she does. So we move on. They find a very empty camp. They get their supplies. Mark argues with Steven, and Steven has fallen in love with Layla. Basically gets his chance. It's very clear from Layla's face that Steven is not near as good of a kisser as Mark. I laughed out loud every single time I watched it when Mark punches Steven and he falls down into the hole. I thought it was absolutely fantastic, and I really enjoyed a lot of that. But Layla's starting to see, like, the, I don't know. So Greg, I'm going to go to you on this. Where do you think Layla's head is now when Steven finally comes clean that, hey, Mark's been pushing you away because he doesn't want Khonshu to take over your body? Do you think there's anything that moved Layla in one way or the other, forgiving Mark or not forgiving Mark?
No, I think what you're seeing is Layla is seeing a softer side of or wanting Mark to have that softer side of the Steven persona. So I think what she's is falling back in love with is that what that presents to her. So she's seeing he's not always gruff. He's not always being pushed, or she's not always being pushed away by him. So I think she's coming at this going, oh, well, this is the softer side of him, and I'm now falling back in love with this, or I'm in love with Mark and I'm projecting onto Steven that he is Mark. There's a lot going on in those scenes between the two of them, and I thought it was really well played and really well written.
Mark, it looks like you agree with that.
Yeah, I do. Where I think the show really excels are in those moments where Oscar Isaac is essentially playing opposite himself. And the back and forth between Steven and Mark continues to get better and better as the show wears on. I mean, it was one of my favorite parts of, I think, the second and third episode to see the dissonance between those two characters and them vying for control of the body. But like now it's like open warfare and it's comical to the point of where it's really nice comedic material when Mark says like, I'm not kidding. I will throw us off of a cliff. And it's funny. It's not slapstick humor, but it's really walking that fine line of being absurd at that point. But it's great.
Steven thinks he can hold his own just simply out of muscle memory. That part cracked me up.
It's great to see. And it's just a really nice stylistic choice to see how different Steven and Mark are in their personalities, that it adds so much color and flavor to this role that it varies it up constantly, that I think if we had Steven all the time, it would great. And the fact is then he sheds that, and a very capable, cool, calm and collected Mark who knows how to deal with these anxiety inducing situations, Mark handles them really well where Steven would not excel. And I love how the two of them come together to almost make this really well-rounded character. I just can't wait though to get Jake in the mix.
There's nothing about this show except for the fact that Jake Lockley is in that third sarcophagus at the end. That is the one thing that I am certain of. Go ahead, Greg.
How great an actor is Oscar Isaac with being able to, with just a facial expression, change his persona between Steven and Mark? Like, you can just see it in his eyes and his facial expressions, and you go, that's amazing that he can pull that off.
Rob, do you just stare at Oscar Isaac's face and dream of him just like the rest of us?
I mean, he's a beautiful man. I'd like my chance to go against him in a beauty contest at some point. We'll work something out. But the physical acting is unbelievable. And you're right. It would get stale. These different personas, how to deal with these different personas from like Layla's perspective has got to be insane. Like, and the things that Mark knows, you know, when he's Mark, and Steven knows when he's Steven, but that information isn't shared with both personalities. Like the whole uniqueness of that, I'm trying not to overthink it because the explanations are beyond what I'm going to be able to comprehend. Cause I can't imagine having two personalities, three trapped in the same body. It's crazy.
They go down into the hole. They come across a vicious butcher. It's not Gore the God Butcher, as predicted by Ryan on this show last week, but those, whatever they are, the mummy guys, that was creepy. That clicking noise.
They're mummies. They're zombie mummies. Mummies.
Yeah. They were awful. They were killing that guy that we see later on as the charge nurse or whatever at the asylum, which is interesting. But I mean, was anybody else just disturbed by these things? Anybody hearing that clicking noise when you try to fall asleep at night?
I'm just saying what I see. I see a lot of bones and a lot of blood.
The
chunky bits.
All right. Well, let's move on. We were just singing Oscar Isaac's praises, and now we get a chance to sing the praises of Mae Calamay, who is her first huge role, and she's the actress that is playing Layla and Ethan Hawke. And the conversation that these two have when Arthur Harrow reveals that Mark killed Layla's dad. Mark claims it was his partner. Is his partner Jake Lockley? I think so. But we will see more about that later on. But Rob, how good has Ethan Hawke been in this series to you, especially in this particular scene when those two are playing off of each other?
He is such a great villain, and I think the thing that puts it over the top for me is, just like a Thanos or anybody else, he believes in what he's doing. He believes it's for a greater good, and for me, that's what sells his whole character. He doesn't get agitated. He stays nice and calm, like he has full control over the situation. Marvel hit another just perfect villain. I love him. Love Ethan Hawke.
Greg, how about you?
So here's the only problem I really had with that scene. Ethan Hawke, it can hold a scene him just himself. But when he's working off of somebody else and they're together in the scene, he steps it up a notch. He is so much better with somebody else. And I think having them from apart across the room looks like they filmed it separately and they were never together. So I think Ethan Hawke's performance could have been so giving and so wonderful with Layla and those two together standing next to each other doing a scene instead of being separated by a giant chasm. I think it detracted a little bit from how great Ethan Hawke really is working with other people.
There has been a couple of times where Ethan Hawke does not talk very loudly in this show. So him and Layla were very far apart, and it reminded me of Shazam, where they're both floating in the air, and the one guy's talking, and Shazam's like, I can't hear you. I can't hear anything you're saying. Like, I kind of thought about that a little bit as well, talking about what Greg is. But yes, I can see what you're saying, Greg. But that scene, it goes back to the second episode where you see Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke in the same room playing off of each other like that. And it does look like that scene you're talking about, it was filmed in different times. So I can absolutely see what you're saying there. But he's been really good. Mark, what do you think?
Well, to piggyback off of something Rob that just said, Marvel does such a nice job with these villains. I think many of these Disney Plus series that we've kind of said that the villains have been wanting didn't get enough screen time. Where this show has really course corrected is Ethan Hawke is getting a lot of screen time to really create and play this villain, and he's being as well developed as Oscar Isaac is in some respects. I love how it's not cluttered. The show is not cluttered. We're taking time with Oscar Isaac. We're taking time with Layla. We're taking time with Ethan Hawke, and we're not overdoing it. Where if I had to go back, there are some moments that I would say, like, even Loki got a little helter skelter at times. Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we all said Erin Kellyman deserved a little bit better than what she got, and the Flag Smashers got at large. The nice thing about this show is Ethan Hawke is getting a fair amount of screen time to develop and really work with this villain, and it's paying off for us in the audience. And that we're invested in the story of this character, and we want to know, like, what happened with Khonshu? Why did you fall out of favor? Why do you now serve, this new god? It's really compelling television, and the only thing that I can say is that I hope that this is a character that we get to see in future seasons. I hope he doesn't die, because I would be here for more Ethan Hawke in the MCU. I think he's great.
Yeah. I think Ethan Hawke, getting him to sign on for more than one project, I feel like it was going to be hard to get Oscar Isaac to do that. I still don't know what they've been able to do there. We will find out what they're able to do. Holly says it's Indiana Jones meets Night at the Museum, which means Pirates of the Caribbean meets Goonies meets Jungle Cruise meets The Mummy meets National Treasure. Yeah. And those are all a lot of fun.
It's fair.
So can I go off of what Mark was saying?
Did she just describe Greg? Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, please go
ahead. You don't want to live with me. Going off of what Mark just said, and I kind of had that same thought process, was Ethan Hawke has no wasted line. There's never been a throwaway line for him. It's every line that he says has some importance to it, means something. It's well written. It's well acted. I'm really impressed with his whole character apparel.
Maya says, so is Arthur Amit's avatar even, or is Amit not alive? I think the only way that Arthur can act on behalf of Amit is with that cane. That's her only part, because Amit doesn't currently have an avatar, because her last avatar was Alexander the Great. Yes. So it's only because of the cane that he can do anything that Amit can do, and that's why he's trying to free her. That is my understanding, Maya, and it looks like everybody agrees with me, so I think I've got that one. I think I've got that one there. So let's continue on a little bit, and we get this confrontation where Layla confronts Steven, and then Mark finds his way out. Like we were talking about earlier, all it takes is a blink of an eye, and Oscar Isaac becomes a completely different person. Again, I want to say it again, Mae Calame, for this being her first major role, has really sucked me in. I didn't love Layla in the first episode. We got her in the second episode. I have completely flipped on that. She has been absolutely fantastic. The emotion she's able to tell simply by, okay, it's go time, putting her hair up into a ponytail. If Layla's hair is in a ponytail, you know things are about to get real. And that she's been absolutely fantastic. We then see her confront Mark. Mark wants to get out of there. Mark ends up getting shot. Did anybody expect we would see the death of Mark Spector in the fourth episode of this show? Rob, what was going through your mind when Mark got shot?
I have so many things that were going through my mind because I was like, are they? I thought probably the little bit of me, is he gone now? Because we are going to build another character, which I didn't think so. I didn't think maybe it was Layla's moment to shine. There's the other part of me that, like I said, wonders if there's some part of he's been dead all along. Maybe when he was shot by Jake or whoever else, when he was supposed to die that night so many years ago, which, by the way, spoiler alert, everybody, that's the night he's going to get offered by Khonshu to become Moon Knight. That's definitely what's coming in one of these last two episodes. I would be shocked if that's not what happens.
Thanks, Rob. You ruined the whole thing.
That's what we're doing on this show. You wouldn't be watching it if you didn't want to
see.
But so at that point, that is just that's my big thing. Like, I know he doesn't have armor, but is he going... Well, then again, I don't want to jump ahead of myself too far, but a big part of me wonders, because Greg said it himself, Ethan Hawke has not had a throwaway line. When they're in that asylum, which we're about to get to, he says that thing about going to hell to ascend up to heaven or whatever it is. It makes me wonder if that is hell. Maybe he's going. Maybe this is our first view of the underworld in the MCU, which has been shown in many different ways. And that's why there's so many characters that are trapped in there. Like, we're going to connect these things. I'm surprised this series has made zero reference to Kang the Conqueror's Rama Tut version in the Egyptian stuff. We have an Egyptian series. We haven't had any reference to that yet.
There has been a logo on a backpack that is Easter egg to Rama Tut. But that's
I remember
all
that. So to answer your question, which I probably didn't do, my mind was thinking a million things when he got shot, and that was just some of them right there.
You just mentioned the Marvel underworld and didn't bring up that M word. Nice work.
Well, I was thinking it. He's coming.
Mark, what went through your head when we watched our beloved Mark Spector get shot in the chest and killed?
I have...
Kara has not seen the episode, and she is watching full spoilers.
It was a great moment because it was unexpected, and I think that's, again, what the show has... Where it's really excelled is the action has been very unscripted. You don't feel like anything has been predictable up until this point. And this included, this was the moment though, that the series just kind of flipped on head. And this is where, to circle back to, there's meat on the bone. This is where all of that good stuff lives, is now we get to speculate, what's the real world? Have we been watching the real world? Is this all really playing out inside of his head? Is he really in an asylum? I don't think that would be too on the nose. And there's too much stuff that's happening in that asylum that would suggest otherwise, that too is not the real world, where, you know, you have people like our sarcophagi, like really in the middle of a mental hospital. No, absolutely not. But it begs us to kind of question, what is reality at this point? Is this in fact the Egyptian afterlife? And I taught world history for 15 years, right? I was never studying just Egyptian lore, but I can tell you this, like, the Egyptians believed that after you died, like, I think it was called the Ba. I apologize. It's been like 3 or 4 years since I've even done this, but like, your spirit would depart your body and it would be temporarily, because then it would go through judgment and it would the Egyptians believed that your remains could like go back and forth between the two spiritual planes, perhaps at night. And that's why the mummification was so important to them, that they did believe in a rudimentary sense that like there was another life, there was an afterlife, there was a rebirth. And that's why that body had to be intact. So I believe that very much is what we're seeing play out, is that there is to be a rebirth. And I don't want to foreshadow too much, but like, we do meet the Egyptian god of fertility at the end of this episode, and fertility and birth.
Hi.
Yeah, and she's obviously very friendly. So I do believe, one, he's dead, But I also think that pairing this into the Egyptian concept of afterlife and the ability to come back, I don't think he's obviously gone for forever. So he is in limbo, or, you know, Rob said this earlier, the field of reeds. He is very much dead. He died. But I think that, again, and it's the comics. No one's ever really dead. Everyone can always come back in Marvel Cinematic Universe, or just in Marvel period.
Except Tony Stark.
Yeah, he's not gone. He's not gone for forever. But that's where, like, this is then where this show, where Mike Ruby, our good friend, and Bobby said it lost him. This was the moment where I was like, okay, now this is getting really interesting, because we're introducing all of these cosmic and otherworldly elements that it looks like phase four is going to be so rooted in, and pulling in together vampires and the multiverse and all these different dimensions. I'm loving it.
Justin said he's upset we didn't meet 10 Second Tom in the asylum. Alex says maybe he's in the Overvoid and the gods mention him falling into the water, and that's in a sacred tomb. I mean, there's a couple of different things that could be going on. Greg, what was going through your head when he got shot?
How gross is that water after sitting there for thousands and thousands of years? That is just wrong and gross. he probably would die of a bacterial infection anyway. The going back, I thought this was a little homage to Bryan Singer and The Usual Suspects. It just felt like the whole ending of why was The Usual Suspects so good is because they do that scene where they're like, oh, here's where he's pulling this from. And he looks at the map and the bottom of the cup. And that kind of had this feeling of going into this asylum. It's like, oh, there's the cane. Oh, there's Tomb Busters, the old VHS. There's this. And then all of a sudden you get Mark and Steven finally on scene together. I thought that was brilliant to have them together as two different actors. One was Oscar Isaac, and the other one was what, his brother, I guess, who played played Steven in this role.
Yeah, he was the body double, and then Oscar Isaac shot both of them, but he was able to play off of his brother. So yes.
Right. So I think that is brilliant. And you obviously, we all know what's going to be coming out of the third. That's the third personality that they alluded to in the past episode. So what I really enjoy about this is I've watched documentaries on Egypt my whole life. You've never seen a face or a real face to some of these gods before. So at the end, when they bring her out, the hippo, I was like, that had me hook, line, and sinker. And then with the sweetest voice in the world, I was blown away by that. So yeah, I think this is a little bit of a tribute to Bryan Singer and The Usual Suspects. And how long has it been since that movie? 15, 20 years. And we kind of get that flashback to that feeling. And that's why that movie did so good. That's why I think this end scene in the asylum did so amazing.
Yeah. It's Tawaret in Egyptian mythology is the god.
I hate to break it to you, Greg, but it's 27 years old now.
Yeah.
Okay, Rob, I know you pay attention to a lot of the same things I do. So okay. I am going to go down some of the things that I caught upon my viewing of this asylum, and I want you to tell me anything you may have seen that I did not.
Okay.
So I know we've got... First, the guy pulling out the bingo numbers is Crawley, who was the golden statue that Steven was talking to in the first couple of episodes. There's a man playing with a Rubik's Cube. Donna, the jerk from the museum, is hugging a stuffed hippo, and she is also another patient. The three nurses are the guy's bodyguard in the last episode. Kaya says this episode coming out on 420 was a mistake. People were extra confused.
That's what made it great.
And then the
what's 420 mean? I don't know what you're talking about.
The other two nurses. Khonshu's head was drawn on the body of a mockingbird by somebody. I talked about the guy playing the Rubik's Cube. Steven was kind of had his chair or he had his ankle clasped to his chair. Layla loves marshmallows. That's a big thing from the comics. Layla takes credit for all of Steven's work, which she was accusing Steven of doing earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. And then the biggest thing to me that really surprised me is when we go into Dr. Harrow's office, it is literally the magician's man cave from the second episode where he says, I'm going to die in a magician's man cave. And then he falls out the window when that jackal's chasing him. It is literally the exact same office. It's just white instead of brick. Yep. Rob, is there anything that you caught that I didn't catch?
The scarab on Layla's pinky.
Okay.
The red scarab thimble, which I mean, she there's another character in Marvel lore that she might become. I think it was a man in the comics, but it wouldn't shock me if they went different ways. In the office, there was also that pyramid looking shape, which very much looks like the thing that he was kept prisoner in the comic version, which I don't know if that's what it's supposed to be or not, but I did notice it. It's not in that picture. The bingo guy who was the homeless guy, he also pulled out a number, which is B22, which doesn't exist. There might be some references to Moon Knight comics. I've seen a couple of people do some weird math, but other than that, we don't know what it means. It was interesting that, yes, she stole the bingo card. But I think, yeah, I'm with you. I think you hit all the main things. And you said the cupcakes, right, from the truck?
Yep, the cupcakes were there, yep.
You ran through them so fast. I was like, yeah, remember that. But yes, I think that's everything. I think that's everything in the asylum, which makes it look like this asylum is so out of whack that you have to assume this is not any type of reality in the asylum.
Mark, would you watch Tomb Buster, which is an off-brand, great value version of Dr.
Fortune and glory, kid. Fortune and glory. Yeah, why not? I mean, I've watched worse stuff on Netflix that's off-brand B versions of stuff that's on Netflix, and I've enjoyed the heck out of it. So why not give me an off-brand RC Cola Indiana Jones?
The penitent man.
We talk about, though, I mean, Holly was spot on where she said this episode was meats. There was a lot of they paid homage to, and quite obviously the influences for this episode were Pirates of the Caribbean, Indiana Jones. This episode screamed, at least for the first part, Indiana Jones, by and large, in the style and the just the whole way that the episode looked and felt. The whole sequence inside of the tomb of Alexander the Great. And I mean, like, you didn't even give me my 5 minutes to nerd out about the Alexander the Great tomb.
Please do.
So I love it. Like, I absolutely love it. This is kind of like the Ark of the Covenant moment in this episode. So Alexander the Great is supposedly the last avatar for Ami. And it's great because it's shrouded in mystery. He died in Babylon around the 3rd century BC. No one really knows what happened to the body. No one even knows what Alexander the Great died from. That, like, you can be like a historian and like a sort of part-time archaeologist, and just that speculation alone for like our community is a lot of fun to do. That, did he die of Guillain-Barré syndrome? Did he have a bacterial infection? Nobody knows, but in the prime of his life, he struck down. And the fall of the empire of Alexander the Great is then another catalyst for the splintering of the world and the known world at that time. But his remains were kept hidden, mostly because people speculated that if one of the generals had control of the body and kind of used it as a prop, that it would enable them to have a lot more clout. So the generals and the infighting kind of led to the secretive burial of him. So a lot of people have speculated traditionally that he was buried in, I want to say that it was in Egypt, Memphis. Memphis. But they've never been able to locate and to find the body.
Next to Elvis?
So in 2020.
Thank you, Rob.
In 2020, there were some guys that think they've actually pinpointed the location of Alexander the Great, but the Greek and Egyptian governments are now fighting politically that they're not allowing these guys to go and do their due diligence and unearth it. So Stephen fictionally has beaten them to the punch. But it was a great Easter egg moment. It's like the Ark of the Covenant moment in
National Treasure.
Yeah.
You can do that to me. You can Nick Cage me all the time. I'll watch it every time.
Yeah, I mean, so like,
I just saw The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent over the weekend. Nicolas Cage and Pedro Pascal are both just absolute treasures.
But for history nerds like myself,
national treasures.
It was quite a cool Easter egg.
Thank you, Mark. I'm sorry I didn't give you that chance earlier.
I was ready. I was like, yo, are we going to geek out about Alexander the Great?
Somebody did their homework.
I had it in the outline, and I skipped past it, and I apologize. Okay, so when we talked about the third sarcophagus, we very much believe that there's only one thing better than two Oscar Isaacs, the only thing better than one Oscar Isaac is two. But what if we get three? There is a third sarcophagus that we very much believe to be Jake Lockley, which is the third personality that does the dirty things that Mark nor Steven are willing to do. I expect we'll see him next week. But the hippo heard round the world, Tawaret, and if I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but I believe that is correct. Mark said she is the goddess of fertility, Tawaret. Greg said it earlier. She has a very high, sweet voice, and she simply says hi, and then we get two guys screaming at the top of their lungs. We're going to pick right back up with that hippo in episode 5, I would assume. Mark, do you have any predictions as to what happens next, or you simply, I know you're just along for the ride, but do you have any predictions as to what happens next?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, and Alex kind of said this earlier, that we're going to dive in, I think quite literally, into the realm of the gods. You see that the Nile River plays pretty heavily in the credits sequence. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get introduced to some other gods, maybe Sobek, who is the mythological representation of the river. River obviously being very important in Egyptian culture. But I think that Tawaret is going to connect us to some other gods that are sort of trapped in this realm. And again, this is where this show is excelling. It's getting into that Loki territory of being really outside of the box and pretty crazy. And we had like alligator Loki and all these variants that just became really fun. Talking hippos are a lot of fun, man.
Alex puts into comment right what I was just about to say. What do y'all think about the gods imprisoned at the beginning? They've already told us that we have a ton of gods that are imprisoned because they showed us an entire room of where they put Khonshu's. What did they call it? Ushepti, I believe, is what they call those statues.
I think that's right.
Greg, any guesses as to where we're going next? Anything you really want to see?
I really want to see the gods. I want to see the interaction with them. I'm interested in how they actually deal with Khonshu and breaking him out, or how we're going to get him out of the stone to further the story along. I think that's kind of interesting. I just want to go back one second to when Khonshu is going back in time to the night sky some 2,000 or 3,000 years ago. Why does nothing happen on Earth? You see it all happening. Why is there no floods? Why is there none of that? Was it just like Marvel's like, that may be too expensive to do? It just felt like a little cheapening out on that scene.
Well, he was just changing the sky, though. Like, he wasn't changing.
But that affects, you know, the moon affects the tides. It affects everything. Like, you should have seen all of that coming back. So
you're right.
It could have happened in some version of the Field of Reeds. Now, because another example in the Field of Reeds, Osiris is the one who oversees the Field of Reeds. Now, he is one of the gods that is not imprisoned. Now, going back to that, the first thing I want to know now, I obviously don't think this is going on inside Stephen or Mark's head, because there wouldn't be another goddess there. I don't think that was going on in the heads. Now, the question is she also in prison there? I think yes.
Yeah, I think so.
I think this next episode, they're going to explore all the past stuff, the things Jake has done from his point of view. I think they're going to show you that night that he became Khonshu's avatar. I think you're going to see that in this next episode to set you up whatever's going to happen in the finale. They also showed that big boat in one of the trailers. That would not shock me if you end up with all these gods or whoever else escaping this underworld or whatever it is to go back to set up whatever this big fight is going to be at the end. And so I think you're going to see some form of that. And then my big question is Mark going to continue to have all these personalities? Is he always going to exist in this schizophrenic world? Are these personalities from different multiverses? And when the multiverse has opened up, they've conversed into this one body. But those are the couple of things I might think we will see in the last two episodes here.
That's a lot to explain in two episodes. Maya says,
do
you think we see Amit? One answer response. Mark, you think we will?
Yes, I do. I think we're going to meet a lot of these imprisoned gods. Alex just said a minute ago, they didn't put all of those gods in the beginning, showing how many of them were imprisoned for no reason. That is foreshadowing what we're going to get in this realm.
Greg, do you think we see Amit?
I think this is the episode you're going to see.
Rob, you think so too?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they didn't show the gods.
So where I'm at right now is I do think I'm wrong where I said last week that I think that Arthur Harrow is a projection of all the bad things, basically a projection of Jake Lockley, and they're fighting against that third personality. I think actually Stephen, Mark, and Jake are going to be able to work together to accomplish whatever they're doing. Because Arthur's the doctor and he's based off of that, I do think Arthur to be an actual real person and he's not one of the personalities. I think, and I believe it's Jeff, but it's definitely Lemire. Jeff Lemire's run of Moon Knight in 2015, 2016. A lot of this kind of seems to be going along that comic book line. I don't think Egypt is real. Well, I think the country of Egypt is real. I think all that is real. I don't think everything is happening in Egypt. I don't think that the asylum is also real. I think there's kind of a merging of the two where there's a mind trick going on here. And a lot of this is taking place within the city of New York or something like that, where Mark is being able to go from place to place and he's seeing Egypt, but it's not Egypt. I really don't know. It's a 25 issue run. Like a lot of the stuff that we've covered in this show is only like the first five or six issues. I would recommend this comic book run on Marvel Unlimited. I would wait 2 weeks until this show is wrapped up, so you're not spoiling anything, just in case they do go along that comic book line. There's still a bunch that they've done differently, but I can see none of it being real, and yet at the same time, all of it being real, if that makes any sense. It's going to be a mind bender. It's going to be a mind bender for sure, and it is definitely mental calisthenics to get us ready for Multiverse of Madness the day after this series drops. Mark.
Now, originally Multiverse was supposed to come out before this series, though, right?
Multiverse of Madness was supposed to come out in March. It was supposed to come out March 25th with this launching.
So I'm sure it'll be great, but I don't know if one, I don't think you necessarily need to see one to enjoy the other, but I'm sure there's going to be a loose connection. Or are you disagreeing with that?
No, I don't. I don't think there's going to be really any connection between the two. I simply think it's going to be hey, we're already really confused and our minds are already thinking along these lines. That's going to make Multiverse of Madness that much easier to consume. Mark and I are going to consume Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness together. That's going to be a lot of fun. Greg, are you going to go see Multiverse of Madness? Marvel's got you back in. Are you in all the way?
I am in all the way. I will be seeing that hopefully when it calms down at the theaters a little bit, where I can go first thing in the morning with my daughter.
Sounds good. We may all have to get together and head over to the Boathouse and watch Piano Rob play a little tunes.
I will be there for that.
All right.
So will I.
Rob, anything that you need to plug?
Come see me play piano. Go do it. Follow me on Instagram or TikTok, piano_Rob. I do live streams. Starting in 2 weeks, I'm going to be on the Diz Nerdy Network. We're launching a new network. I do a Monday night talk show. We have fantastic guests, like crazy guests, like people that have been on Broadway and stuff like that. So, yeah, come hang out with me.
Mike, a new network in this economy? What is happening at the Disney Fanatics?
A whole lot of Chip and Co. That's what's been happening at Disney Fanatics. We got a lot of breaking news that's going to come out Thursday. Stay tuned to Chip and Company. We have a lot of breaking news happening that day. We are under embargo right now. So there's some pretty cool stuff coming. Boop, doo, doo, doo. Breaking news. Other than that, I am working with Mark on Diz Life podcast. We are having a great time on Monday nights. Plus, he is my co-host on Thursday nights at Chip and Co. for our Disney news and review. And then other than that, Disney Fanatics, we are live whenever we can. But also, I will be on the Diz Nerdy Network as the Disney Underground starting next Thursday.
Greg, can I put you on the spot and ask about the Magical Mornings?
So Magical Mornings is we are changing up a little bit. Whether we are going to continue doing the morning or it's going to turn into a podcast is a little rough right now. I think that To do a show like that, you need to have a little bit better production and quality if you're going to keep doing that on a daily basis. And I don't want to do anything that I don't feel like is getting 100% the best production.
Sounds good. Mark, Pinch of Pixie Dust Travel, sponsor of Earth's Mightiest Weirdos, will be going to Disneyland in a few short weeks to get plenty of content to sponsor this show, Avengers Campus, all things Avengers Campus. Yourself, fellow weirdo Sarah, and Kevin will join us on June 6th to preview Miss Marvel and to talk all things Avengers Campus. What else is happening at Diz Life Podcast?
In 30 days, I'm going to California. I'm going to Disneyland. I'm so excited. I can't think of much else other than that right now, but I'm living my best Disney life, man. DizLifePodcast.com. We had a few changes with the show. Dwayne has moved on to some other projects, and I have got a brand new co-host in Greg as our roving reporter on Monday. Mousepiration Mike has joined us as well on Mondays, and that's Diz Live, 7:30 from Parks. I connect with Kirk over at, we have a TikTok only show. It's a podcast called Tiki Room Radio. That's Thursday at 7:30. And then I'm still dropping audio podcasts every single Wednesday. And Brian is joining me in 2 weeks. We had Take Two, Genie Plus Take Two, and his family and mine purchased Genie Plus. We compared notes. We talked about Genie Plus and the improvements that we feel have been made to Genie Plus since I last test drove it in November. But we're having a lot of fun. So come and hang out with us and live your best Disney life.
Earth's Mightiest Weirdos upcoming schedule. We talk Moon Knight episode 4 tonight. Next Monday, we'll be talking Moon Knight episode 5. Mark your calendars for May 8th, Strange Sunday, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness spoiler review. Sunday night, May 8th, we will do a similar thing like we did with the Spider-Man No Way Home review. We will have multiple weirdos in and out of the stream. And then the next night, we will talk the Moon Knight finale. Follow at the Donovan Rose on Instagram. He will be joining us to talk about the Moon Knight finale on May 9th. Everything else at the Nerd Life Network, comics and cinema on Tuesdays. They will be talking about the new movie, The Northman, tomorrow night. They will also be talking about the new Avengers Illuminati comic that just came out Wednesday night, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know what they're doing this week, but I do know that they are doing a Star Wars special talking about Star Wars in the world of sports on May the 4th. I will be a part of that after I go to Hollywood Studios and meet up with the Walrus Cart man himself, Kirk. And then on Thursday night, Nerdy Girls After Dark. I don't know what they're doing, but you can count on the girls always doing the right thing. Go to at Logan Dominic Cosplay on Instagram. See if we can get him to MegaCon. Gentlemen, as long as everything in Moon Knight, if one thing's real, I hope it is this lady. Until next time, laters, gators.
Earth's Mightiest Weirdos is brought to you by Pinch of Pixie Dust Travel. People who love travel understand that life isn't about the breaths you take, it's about the moments that take your breath away. That's why we help coordinate the most magical adventures for you and your family. Disney, Universal, Sandals, Norwegian, Carnival, and more, we are a full-service concierge travel agency that will help with every aspect of your journey. Let us take care of the details while you enjoy your family. Get a quote today by calling us at 570-832-7798 or fill out a trip request form at pinchofpixiedusttravel.com. Just follow the second star to the right straight on to your adventure. That's pinchofpixiedusttravel.com, where you're making memories one trip at a time.